Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Why does a cold pool feel warmer the second time you put your toes in? Why does a person who's trying to break into a safe run his fingers over sandpaper? Would it be great or not so great if you couldn't feel any physical pain? Why does stubbing your toe have different sensations through time? Why do Mediterranean cultures touch each other more while they're talking than Scandinavian cultures? And what does this have to do with cuddle puddles, or why NBA players bump chests, or why puppies sleep in dog piles? Welcome to Inner Cosmos with me, David Eagleman. I'm a neuroscientist and author at Stanford. And in these episodes, we sail deeply into our 3-pound universe to understand why and how our lives look the way they do. Today's episode is a love story about our sense of touch, what it is, how it works, and why it plays such a critical role in our lives. So let me start with an acquaintance of mine who many years ago worked as a midnight phone operator at AT&T. He would get calls from people in the middle of the night and he'd say, "Hello, this is AT&T, how can I help you?" And they would say, "Hi." And he'd say, "What can I help you with?" And they'd say, "I just need someone to talk with." So there's a lot of loneliness in the world. Now, I tend to be suspicious when people talk about problems as modern phenomenon, given that most things have a deep history. But an increase in loneliness might actually be something new. If you look back even just a century ago, people lived in boarding houses with lots of other people, and there was lots of intergenerational living where you had at least 3 generations in the same household. Now, that was probably crazy making, but whatever the case, the situation has changed a lot. As the middle class grew, the aspiration was for nuclear families to each get their own house with their own dishwasher and their own washing machine and their own television set. And in most neighborhoods, yards became more and more private. And at some point, people stopped hanging out in their front yards and playing on the streets, but instead hung out in their backyards behind their fences. And by the year 2000, we got books like Bowling Alone, which was written by the political scientist Robert Putnam. And this book was about the decline of civic engagement since the 1960s. People used to be in bowling clubs and belong to their church or synagogue or mosque and see a community of people every day and every weekend. And they were in Rotary clubs and Shriners clubs and Kiwanis clubs. And people who were recent immigrants often had clubs from the towns they originally came from. And these clubs lasted for decades until the wave of immigrants finally died out and their children, born in America, didn't really need to keep this up anymore. So because of lots of factors like suburbanization and the rise of television and the decline of unions and the disappearance of clubs, we ended up with this decline of social capital. Now, of note here is that Putnam's book was published before the invention of the smartphone. And while the internet existed and video games existed, they were nothing like what they quickly became in the first decade after that book was published. And so society has changed much further in the past quarter century. And the question is, are we now not just bowling alone, but not even bowling at all? Has society actually gotten lonelier? Now, I'm going to address this from both sides, arguing that there's more opportunity for relationship and less. Now, on the side of more opportunity, one of the consequences that has always amazed me about the internet is that now every person has the chance to find their tribe. If you are a stamp collector, or a mathematical poet, or a corporate mystic, or a punk rocker historian or whatever, you can find your people. There will be no end to the websites and subreddits and substacks and whatever else you need to make you feel like you have your group. Whereas if you grew up pre-internet, you would never know that so many others like you were out there. And related to this, a lot of parents lament that kids are spending all their time on video games, but most video games have built-in social mechanisms so that you can chat with other people. Now, chatting is not the same as spending time in real life, but with a million games to choose from, you end up finding people who share your interest. And there's a lower barrier to entry for making acquaintances, and sometimes these become friends. So, with multiplayer games, we have gone from bowling alone to bowling virtually but not alone, with other people's avatars who can chat with us and become friends of a sort. And there's another important way in which I think technology will have a shot at reducing loneliness, and this is with AI. Already we've seen an explosion of companies selling AI relationships. And if you're interested in the complexities of this, please check out episode 39, which is on the future of AI relationships. But beyond AI girlfriends or boyfriends, I suspect one of the places we'll see the most immediate impact with AI is in areas like mental health therapy. The fact that you can have a therapist 24/7, someone you can talk to in the middle of the night, someone who remembers everything you've said, someone who is not at all interested in talking about themselves, but just about listening to you and giving you good advice and being there and truly has your best interests in mind. And so the question is, does new technology like the internet and AI scratch the itch of loneliness? Because I'm generally a cyber optimist, I feel like there are many ways that can be correct. However, while this hits on many cylinders, what it misses is a big one, touch. And we really care about touch. So that's what I'm going to talk about in today's episode, what touch is all about. Because our world has become a lot of screens and less about holding hands or hugging with strangers or friends. And the more I surveyed friends of mine on this point, I was surprised to realize how much touch is lacking in a lot of people's lives. One of my friends goes to Burning Man every year, and the thing he loves the most is that people hug people. Total strangers will say, "Give me a hug," and it's innocent. People can do this without sexuality, and people clearly appreciate it. And there are get-togethers all over the world called cuddle puddles or cuddle parties where dozens of people lie on mats and cuddle one another. And it's not sexual. Instead, it's fulfilling the very primitive desire we all have for touch. And by the way, this same desire is seen across the animal kingdom where you constantly see non-sexual physical contact among social animals. The way you'll see puppies collect into a big dog pile when they're sleeping. And so from the point of view of the brain, I've become really interested in what we might be losing here. We're in an era with infinite hyperlinks between people, but fewer physical links. So for today's episode, I want to take us on a journey about touch, what it's all about, and how it colors our lives. When we look at touch across the animal kingdom, we see that it plays a critical role in everything from child rearing to finding food to getting mates. But not everyone thinks highly of it. Plato thought that vision was hot stuff and considered touch to be the most carnal, the least noble of the senses. But his student Aristotle developed a different view. He felt we learn the world by going out and touching it. That's how we figure things out. Not everything can be achieved purely by looking around and reasoning. So Aristotle said, quote, "While in respect of all other senses, we fall below many species of animals, in respect of touch, we far excel all other species in exactness of discrimination. That is why man is the most intelligent of all animals." So, why did Aristotle privilege touch? What is special about touch, and how does it all work? So let's start at the beginning. The largest organ in your body is actually on your body. It's your skin, and it is a miraculous sort of material. Unlike your other senses, which are focused at your eyes and your ears and so on, touch is spread throughout the body. And touch is the only sense that puts you in direct contact with your subject instead of assessing it from a distance, as you do with photons with seeing or air compression waves with hearing. In contrast, you have to be right up against something. You can't touch something without being touched yourself. So the really amazing part is how it works. You have a whole zoo of touch receptors in your skin. These are specialized sensors for pressure, for itch, for stretch, for temperature. Some receptors are specialized for pain. Some are for pain caused by chemicals like an acid. Some are for mechanical pain like a cut. And some are for thermal pain like a burn. And all of these things work in collaboration to read different sensory aspects of the world. So when you pass your finger over something like the petal of a flower or the sleeve of your jacket or the back of your dog, different receptor types read the object in different ways. And what's interesting is that feeling doesn't happen in the top layer of your skin, but in the layer underneath. And this is why safe crackers sand their fingertips to expose the sensitive skin in the layer underneath, so they can be really sensitive to the tiny, tiny shifts in the locking mechanism of the safe. So, collectively, this whole zoo of receptors inside your skin allows you to tell a lot about what's happening in the outside world in terms of texture and temperature and pressure and roughness and hardness. And your sense of what's out there is totally dependent on these sensors. If you block their operation with a local anesthetic, then you don't sense anything out there at all. So these sensors work together to give you exquisite sensitivity. This is why you can reach into your pocket and you can tell a quarter from a nickel without looking. Your sensitive fingertips detect the tiny ridges around the quarter's edge. And those are very small, but that's nothing. Your fingers can actually detect textures that are way finer. You can feel a texture 75 nanometers high. That's 1/1000th of a human hair. If you run your fingers over that, you can tell it's there. And you know all those ridges and grooves on your fingertips? They serve as sensation amplifiers. They expand the skin's surface area when they encounter pressure. So evolution has sculpted your fingertips into incredibly fine instruments of touch. They traffic in information we can't otherwise perceive with our other senses.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So I'm going to come back to skin in just a second, but first I want to make it clear that your system of sensation from the body picks up information both from the outside but also from the inside. And collectively, this is grouped into what we call the somatosensory system, which just means sensing from the body. As I said a minute ago, unlike vision or hearing, somatosensation doesn't happen in a discrete sensory organ like eyes or ears. Instead, the receptors are widely distributed in the skin, in the muscles, in the bones, in the joints, in internal organs, in the cardiovascular system. So even though we call it one system, it's giant and it's distributed. And every second of your life, these millions of receptors are streaming information to your brain, where the information then steers your behavior. Now, in today's episode, I'm not going to talk too much about the internal monitoring, but just for sketching out the landscape, I'll tell you two of the main things you're doing on the inside. The first is constantly determining where your limbs exist in space, your body position and your limbs' movement. This is known as proprioception. Now, knowing how your body is positioned, this is something we just take for granted. But if you lose this information, as sometimes happens, for example, from a viral infection, you can no longer do things like walk. because now you need to visually look at your feet and your hands to have a sense of where they even are. So normally your brain knows where your limbs are by constantly drinking in this fat stream of information. But if that goes offline, your only way to estimate where your limbs are is to look at them visually. And if the lights in the room turn off, you are going to fall to the floor. You can't maintain posture, much less make any kind of fine movements without having visual feedback. So even though you may or may not have even been aware of this crazy thing called proprioception, you cannot function without it. And the other internal monitoring that I'll mention is called interoception, which is this amazing system by which you monitor the inside of your body, like movements of your gut or muscle stretch or changes in heart rate or stretch receptors in your lungs that modulate your breathing rate or stretch receptors in your stomach and guts that tell you when you're full. You also have chemical receptors in the brain which monitor carbon dioxide levels to tell you if you're suffocating. And you have these in the circulatory system to monitor blood levels and trigger thirst. You have receptors in the throat that are close cousins of the touch receptors in your skin. And these are what detect whether there's an object in there to trigger gagging. And again, all the stuff we tend to take for granted. But every single one of these receptors is critical for you to have the experience in the world that you do. These underpin your ability to be a body moving around in the world. But for today, we're going to talk about the other side of somatic sensation, not monitoring the inside, but touching the outside world. So for this, your entire body is covered by that one giant sensory organ, the skin. Now, this large, seamless sensory sheet is completely packed with receptors that allow you to feel when something or someone makes contact with you, when a nearby object is vibrating or when something is hot or cold. Now, touch seems pretty simple. You just push your skin up against something and you say, oh, that's there, and it's hot or it's cold or it's textured or it's smooth. But this apparent simplicity masks the incredible variety and complexity of how your brain and body do this. So let's surface the details. So first, to detect pressure and vibration, you have a specific flavor of sensory receptors in your skin called mechanoreceptors. And these are just built of special structures that make them sensitive to being physically stretched or bent. Now, you have different types of mechanoreceptors that have different structures and locations, and that gives you the ability to sense and interpret a huge range of things in the world. I won't go into too much detail, but I'll mention you have some receptors which respond to fine light touch. If you're interested, these are called Meissner's corpuscles or Merkel discs. And you have other types of receptors found in the deeper layers of the skin that respond to stronger and cruder pressure. If you're interested, these are called Pacinian corpuscles or Ruffini's endings. Now, some of these receptor types respond quickly right when something gets touched, but then they stop responding if the touch remains there. And others of these are slowly adapting, which means they keep firing if the touch stays there. So the rapidly adapting ones are well suited to respond to something that's going on and off, like a vibration, because they stop responding right after the initial thing, and therefore they're ready to respond again a moment later. But others stay firing, so you can know when you touch your coffee cup that you're still touching it. So the thing I want to illustrate here is that you have this interplay of different receptor types that gives you a very rich, multi-layered sensation of touch. Fine and coarse, fast and slow. Now, it's not just mechanoreceptors that you have in your skin, but you've got these other things called thermoreceptors, which tell you about temperature. And you have separate thermoreceptors for cool and warm. Now, if this wasn't something you already knew, it's kind of amazing, right? You're like this sophisticated meat robot with all these sensors packed into your skin to detect different things in the world. Now, what these thermoreceptors do is they detect changes in temperature on the skin surface relative to body temperature. So a cold thermoreceptor in your finger, it's going to signal only a little tiny bit of change when you test the water coming out of the sink. But it's going to trigger a really strong signal when you dunk your hand into a bucket of ice water. Now, speaking of cold water, you've probably noticed that a cold lake feels warmer the second time you dip your foot in. Why? Obviously, the temperature of the water hasn't changed, but the relative temperature of the water compared to your now chilled skin, that difference has decreased, and that changes your perception of the water temperature. Now, you have a separate set of receptors that carry information about warmth, but these cool and warm receptors, they track temperature changes only to a point, and after that, their signaling drops off, and information about things that are very cold or very hot, that gets taken over by separate receptors, pain receptors, and I'll return to those in a moment. But before we get to pain, I just want to mention that these cool and warm thermoreceptors can get activated by other things like certain shapes of molecules. For example, you have molecules that happen to bind to these cold receptors like menthol. Menthol is just a shape that happens to activate these cool thermoreceptors, giving the pleasant illusion of coolness. And because we generally like that, we dump that molecule into our toothpastes and our shaving creams to activate these cool thermoreceptors. Similarly, the active ingredient in chili peppers is called capsaicin, and this is a molecule of a certain shape that happens to bind to warm thermoreceptors, and therefore it creates the illusion of heat. So capsaicin is used in ointments that you rub on your skin, like Icy Hot. Okay, so now we've talked about how receptors in your skin detect touch and detect temperature, and now let's come back to pain. The sensation of pain is one that most of us would probably rather not have, but it's actually a gift from nature that's critical for our survival. Feeling pain is how we detect damage to our cells and our tissues. Now, our perception of pain is mediated by another type of little receptors called nociceptors. And what activates these is damage to the tissue. And even though pain just seems like pain, you actually have very different types of nociceptors. First, you have nociceptors that are activated by physical damage to the tissue, like caused by pressure, a needle stick, a broken bone. These are called mechanical nociceptors. Then you have thermal nociceptors, which respond to things that are extremely hot or extremely cold. Then you have chemical nociceptors, which are activated by things like spider toxins when you get bit, or by certain cooking spices, or by poisonous gases, like the kind used as chemical weapons in World War I. Now, again, you might think that feeling no pain would be a blessing, but how would we know whether that's true or not? The answer is, this sometimes happens because of genetic mutations, and the inability to feel pain is a dangerous curse. So take as an example a man who I'll call Paul. When Paul was a child, he would push a swing and let it smash into his face. He didn't mind the broken nose and chipped teeth because he has never felt physical pain. He has a rare disorder called congenital analgesia, an inability to register painful sensations. By the way, congenital just means you're born with it, and algesia means pain, and analgesia means no pain. So congenital analgesia just means you can't feel any pain and you were born that way. So Paul can feel a knife cutting his finger, but only the touch is registered, not the pain of the injury. And because his thermoreceptors are intact, he can easily tell the difference between warm and cool water, but he doesn't feel the pain of things that are really hot or really cold. So feeling no pain is a curse for someone like Paul, because pain is critical to avoiding bodily damage. It's what tells you about harms and threats. When Paul interacts with extreme temperatures, he doesn't get any immediate feedback telling him to pull his hand away or to avoid the situation. One of his most frequent injuries as a child was burning himself. He was interested in listening to the sizzling sound that his skin made. So his parents were constantly forced to take creative and desperate measures to keep their son safe, like putting socks over both his hands and goggles over his eyes. Often they put a helmet on him to protect him from his regular risk of head injury. They constantly checked him for swelling and bruising and burns. Because of his lack of sensation, this kind of outside inspection was the only way that they or he could tell whether tissue had been damaged. So much of Paul's childhood was spent in hospitals, whether from jumping off extreme heights or banging his head against the wall until his forehead swelled up. So Paul is lucky to be alive because not everyone with congenital analgesia makes it through childhood. The moral of Paul's story is that pain is two-faced. It hurts, but it also protects. So back to normal pain perception. Fascinatingly, you have different types of fibers that carry these signals to the brain, and they carry information at different speeds. So let's say you stub your toe. The next time you do this, try to pay attention to the way the pain is registered, because thanks to some fast fibers called A-delta fibers, you'll register a fast, sharp pain. And then you have these other much slower fibers called C fibers. And when their signals finally catch up, you'll feel the more prolonged but slightly less intense pain. So if you start paying attention to this, you can start unmasking the mechanisms of your body. The last thing I just want to note about these nociceptors, these pain receptors, is that they're distributed throughout your skin and your body and your internal organs and in your joints. But the one notable exception is the brain, which has no nociception. And that's why patients can be kept conscious during brain surgery. I've done experiments before while a patient is undergoing brain surgery, and I'm talking with them and having them watch things on a screen and asking them questions, and the patient can just sit there and talk and provide feedback about their perceptions without feeling any pain from the surgery itself. It's one of nature's funny ironies that the organ that perceives pain for your entire body is the one organ that registers no pain itself.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward.
You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So, we've been talking about these receptors all over the body, and from the body, these signals come screaming up the spinal cord to the brain, and there, these signals come slamming into a strip of real estate that we call the primary somatosensory cortex, which is just under where you would wear headphones. If you were to measure brain activity along the strip, what you find is that every little bit of it corresponds to some part of your body. And what you find is that not all body parts are represented equally. Some parts have more real estate devoted to them, like the hands and the mouth and the lips and the tongue. And this corresponds to their importance. Not surprisingly, as you know from experience, you're able to discern much more subtly touch stimuli on these parts of your body than, say, on your thigh or your back, which have smaller representations in the cortex. Now, it's not surprising that we devote so much brain territory to our hands. Humans began to walk upright several million years ago, and that freed up our hands to reach out and examine objects. And over time, that changed the importance of hands, making them some of the most important body parts that we have for examining the world. And so our brain changed accordingly. The situation now is that each of our fingertips has 2,000 touch receptors in it, and they're streaming continuous detailed information to the brain. The philosopher Immanuel Kant once said, quote, "The hand is the visible part of the brain." Now, what's cool is that in different animals, the sizes of different body parts represented in the sensory cortex, this differs across species because different animals rely on different sensations to survive in their niche. So when you look at the rat sensory cortex, an enormous part of the real estate is devoted to the whiskers because that's a huge part of what lets the rat navigate dark spaces to find food and avoid obstacles. Or in an elephant, there's an enormous amount of real estate devoted to its trunk. Or in the star-nosed mole, it has a lot of territory devoted to its snout, which has these fingers on it that feel around to construct its 3D model of its tunnels. Okay, so back to humans. We have this strip of cortex that receives the information from the body. That's the primary somatosensory cortex, and that neighbors these other regions that we call the sensory somatosensory cortex and the tertiary somatosensory cortex. And these are involved in more complex integration of sense, like what you need to recognize objects based on touch. This sort of higher order processing lets you translate round and smooth into the recognition of an apple. And if you get damage to these higher areas, then you get disorders like tactile agnosia, which means not knowing what you are touching. So if you have tactile agnosia, and I have you close your eyes and I put a book in your hands, you feel it with your fingers and you run your hands over it, and I'll say, "What is that object?" And you'll say, "I don't know." Let's say I put a cell phone in your hands or a shoe. You have no idea what they are when you feel them. But now I ask you to open your eyes and look at those things sitting on the table, and you have no trouble saying, "Oh, that's a book, that's a cell phone, that's a shoe." So it's not that you don't know what objects are, it's that you no longer have the ability to tell what something is simply by feeling it, simply by touch. What I always find so fascinating about neuroscience is seeing how the self breaks down. Just think about that example. It seems so easy and obvious that you can close your eyes and feel something with your fingers to determine what it is. Of course you can do that. But what we learn from life's cruel natural experiments is that easy, obvious things are underpinned by very complex brain networks. They don't come for free. And when these delicate pink brain areas get damaged, we see that the ease of doing the task was just an illusion. The task, in fact, is massively complex and it does not come for free. So many of the things in our life result from hundreds of millions of years of evolution and super complicated mechanisms running in the brain that you didn't even realize you had. Remember that the brain sits enchambered in a dark, silent skull, and it doesn't have direct access to any of the stuff out there. So your skin is a highly specialized machine that converts different types of energy, mechanical and thermal and chemical, into electrical energy and sends information racing up the spine to the cerebral cortex. This is how we read detailed information from the outside world. Okay, so we've surveyed how touch works, and all of the incredible detail of it might make you suspect that touch means a lot to the brain, and you'd be right, it's fundamental. Now, how do we know that? Well, for example, in the 1950s, a scientist named Harry Harlow asked questions about the importance of touch to baby monkeys. He separated an infant from its mother, and he raised it in a cage with two substitute wireframe monkeys. These were adult monkey shapes that were just built out of wire. Now, one was bare wire but had a bottle of milk for the infant, and the other had no milk but was covered in terry cloth. So what happened was the baby monkeys would drink some milk and then they would immediately steal over to the terry cloth mother and clutch at it for the rest of the time. And if the babies got frightened, they ran only for the terry cloth mother. So these studies confirmed earlier suspicions that there was more to the mother-infant relationship than nourishment. Harlow realized that this contact comfort was essential to the normal brain development of monkeys, and by extension, other studies have shown how critical this is for human children. Touch is a massively important part of the mother-child interaction. So Harlow did another experiment to understand this. He had infant monkeys raised in cages, and they could see other monkeys and could smell them and hear them, but they couldn't touch them. And these monkeys were devastated. They cried and they paced frantically. But then when the screen between the monkeys had holes in it so the mothers and babies could touch, that was enough to keep the youngsters from developing behavioral problems. So proper brain development in monkeys and humans requires touch. It's not optional. For a baby, having loving adults interact with you and play with you and tickle you and comfort you in an early age, these are all requisite for shaping the brain. Cuddling a child isn't just something that's nice for the parents, it's actually necessary for the child's normal brain development. So, touch shapes the brain and is the basis for a healthy emotion life. But of course, it's not just about emotion. It's also about information. It's how we come to understand our world and exert our own influence over it. In fact, the way that we understand and interpret the world, our cognition, is fundamentally rooted in our physical bodies. How things feel to us, rough or warm or heavy, this interacts with our thoughts and our behaviors. We build metaphors on top of our interactions with the physical world. We say things like, that exam was rough. We say, she has a warm personality. Or we say, boy, that was a heavy movie. At the root of our language is what we can touch and feel. This is called embodied cognition, and I'm going to talk about this more in a later episode. But for now, I just want to say that not only our language, but many other sorts of judgments we make are rooted in our bodies. Even things like making judgments about other people. Is that person warm? Is that company competent and trustworthy? These use some of the same brain machinery as feeling warmth or solidness and texture and all the things our touching exploration of the world gives us. And in our daily lives, touch serves as a high bandwidth channel that continually moves information back and forth between people. It's a really powerful communication tool. We give assurance by laying a hand on someone's shoulder. We give kudos with a slap on the back. in an aggressive situation, we poke with a finger. In an affectionate relationship, we move a hair out of the way or we nuzzle somebody's cheek. In a first meeting, we shake hands, and sometimes we make judgments about the other person by the firmness of their hold. In fact, people communicate much more information through touch than we are typically aware of. So one study asked volunteers to communicate an emotion to a stranger just using touch. They were both blindfolded. So they would try to communicate things like anger or fear or disgust or love or gratitude or sympathy or happiness or sadness. Think about how you would try to communicate these with touch. So most people were pretty sure they weren't going to be able to do this accurately, but the result turned out that the other person was able to understand the social emotion about 75% of the time. That's surprisingly good, and it underscores how nuanced and sophisticated a communication channel we have in touch. And just look at how important touch is in the world of sports. Watch professional basketball players. They're constantly patting each other on the back or chest bumping or high-fiving. What is that all about? Well, one possibility is it's just a tradition with no particular meaning. But some people started to wonder whether all that human touch was about a deeper form of bonding and therefore good for their game. So scientists at the University of Illinois measured the amount of physical contact each team had in the NBA. How many times did players make friendly contact with one another on the court? They then followed the ranking of all the teams through the seasons, and they found that NBA teams who had more contact did better by the end of the season. In other words, touch seemed to predict performance across all the NBA teams. Why? Well, one hypothesis is that the contact has the effect of increasing trust and affiliation while also lowering stress hormones. And that sheds light on a tradition in long-distance bike races. If someone is really slowing down, really out of energy, a fellow biker will ride along beside them and simply touch them with one finger. And their riding speeds up. Apparently, it's very effective. Just a bit of human touch is enough to reinvigorate someone so they can find a second wind. And it's for reasons like these that we see bonding touch throughout the primate world. When monkeys groom one another, they're using touch as a tool to communicate trust and to strengthen bonds. And across the world, people want to keep their communication channel of touch open, but different cultures do it differently. You've probably noticed that people in southern climates like the Mediterranean touch each other a lot more than people farther north like the Scandinavians. Those closer to the equator, they hug, they kiss on the cheek, they slap each other on the back, they hold hands. Why? Well, one hypothesis goes that people who are closer to the equator where it's warmer, they wear fewer clothes, they have more skin exposed, and it only pays off to touch someone if they're going to feel it. Up north, they wear heavy clothes, and this communication channel is essentially cut off, so it doesn't get used as much. So let's wrap up. What we've seen is that touch is a system that covers your body, and although we take it for granted, it's a massive communication channel that sits right at the center of our perception and cognition. That big, beautiful sensory organ we come wrapped in tells us so much about the physical world. So let's come back to the effect of technology. I'm generally optimistic about the ways that technology can connect people across long distances, but what is not clear is what this will mean for the basic sense of touch. Brains need touch all throughout development. We drop into the world half-baked, and Mother Nature expects certain kinds of input, and touch is a major one of those. And we need it as we move throughout our lives. So in other episodes, I've talked about hearing and vision, but what we've seen today is that the extremely dense zoo of receptors in your skin, which pick up touch and vibration and stretch and temperature and pain, this zoo of receptors is one of your brain's main ways of knowing its world. And as we move into an era of more screens and internet protocols and Zoom meetings and VR, we will fill our eyes and ears with the joys of people on the other side of the planet. But we should be careful about what this means for touch. So, returning to the old phone company AT&T, their slogan in the 1980s was, "Reach out and touch someone." And I love the sentiment, but I always found the slogan ironic because the technology of the telephone actually reduces touch interaction. So, I hope that after you've heard this episode today, you'll think about ways to make sure you're getting enough touch, whether from a dog, a cat, a cuddle puddle, a friend, a lover, because our bodies are built for this. So for real, without technology, reach out and touch someone. Go to eagleman.com/podcast for more information and to find further reading. Send me an email at podcast@eagleman.com with questions or discussion. And check out and subscribe to Inner Cosmos on YouTube for videos of each episode and to leave comments. Until next time, I'm David Eagleman, and this is Inner Cosmos.
Dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.